Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to The Man's Voice on this Sunday afternoon. I hope it's pleasant wherever you are. I hope the weather is treating you right. I want to say to my panel, good evening and welcome. Glad you're here with me. How are things where everyone is? Are you all comfortable and doing well? And why don't you tell everybody what your name is and where you are? Let's start off with Ron.
Good evening, everybody. This is Ron Tate. Beautiful sunny Miami, and
Ron,
I know
we can't really hear you. Can you move a little bit? We can't hardly hear you. Hello? There we go.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Good evening, everybody. This is Ron Staten calling from sunny, beautiful Miami, where you probably think that it's cloudy and rainy right now if you've been watching the weather forecast, but looking out my window, and it's hardly a cloud in the sky and clear blue sky, so much for forecasting. But good evening, everyone.
Good evening. And what about you, Bruce? Where are you?
I am in one of God's best creations, Traverse City, Michigan, flanked by water everywhere, purity in its best form. Is that deep enough for you? It is gorgeous, as Ron said, not a cloud in the sky, probably about 78 degrees, light breeze, more of the same tomorrow, and I went to the Microbrew Music Festival last night and had a great time.
Joe, what about you?
I'm in my son's house in Ferndale, Michigan. Weather's nice. I'm inside at his kitchen table, and he has stools instead of chairs, but I'll make do for the hour.
All right. What about you, Don?
Hello, I'm Don Wiggins, and I'm in beautiful Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where God lives.
Wow.
Are you sure about that?
I think Frank is aboard. Frank, why don't you tell everybody hello and where you
Frank, are. I'm in Virginia Beach, still celebrating my 48th wedding anniversary. Things are great in Virginia Beach.
48 years of marriage, that is to be applauded. I mean, not very many people can get there anymore.
Congratulations, Frank.
Thank you.
I want to start off because I of course, live in a college town, and I noticed school, I think, starts tomorrow. I'm sure it starts tomorrow, but everyone is in town. And I want to start it off with there are a lot of parents taking their kids to school, freshmen, of course. That's usually when that happens. And a lot of students will be college students going for the first time and come up with their majors and are doing things. And I want to come up with top three majors that are considered the worst college degrees in today's job market. And so if your kid is in one of these majors, I think we should discuss about, you might want to think about trying to help them to change their mind. But the number one, by all accounting, worst college degree for today's job market is a criminal justice major. Ron, why do you think that's true?
Wow, you caught me off guard with that one. I wouldn't have thought criminal justice. I think maybe because people aren't joining, you know, the police forces, and, you know, they're afraid to, maybe. You know, I'm really not sure. You caught me off guard with that one.
All right. What about you, Bruce, what do you think? Why do you think criminal justice is the number one degree that really is not really one of the top majors?
Well, I'm with Ron. I don't believe that. It may be that people are running away from it for a variety of reasons right now, but criminal justice seems like we're involved in it hot, heavy, deep, and in every way you can think of nowadays. So I really don't understand why it would be the worst, other than people are shying away, as he said, avoiding the subject, but that doesn't necessarily make it the worst degree. By the time they get out of school, it might be the most needed, like engineers.
Well, the reason that was given, and this survey was done through a category across the nation of educators and college professionals, and it says that because people who usually join this degree want to be detectives, or they want to be some type of person in the political arena doing out in the work, but to do that, it doesn't take a degree to do it. You can join a police department with not necessarily a degree and become a detective without having to have a criminal justice degree. So what they're saying is you can get the work done without having to have the degree. And that's why they consider it one of the worst, or the worst, college degree that a lot of kids are going for. And I think number two surprised me. What do you think number two degree would be, Don? What would you think one of the worst college degrees, do you think, number two? Because number one was criminal justice. Number two, what do you think that is?
Mortician. Mortician. I don't think I would want to be a mortician right now. I mean, that's not very popular.
No, actually, I'm surprised to find that number two is a psychology.
Is what?
Psychology. A psychology degree is considered one of the worst degrees for today's job market. But why do you think that's true, Joe? Why do you think that's true?
Well, I'm surprised to hear that. I mean, I think psychology is, is for therapists, marriage therapists, child therapy, and I would think there'd be a demand for that, substance abuse therapy, I think those people are in demand and do a lot of good work. Maybe it's stressful.
From this report that I'm reading, the reason it was given was to do anything in psychology, you need a PhD. So to start off and thinking in a year you'll be able to get out and get a job is not true. You need at least a PhD in psychology to be qualified to do any job worth making any money. And so they said if you're going for the long haul and you got somebody to pay your bills and take care of you while you do it, that is good to do. But if you're going and thinking in 4 years you're going to jump out with a job, they're saying you get a minimum wage job and you have to need at least a PhD to make any money in the job. Number three, I don't think anybody would get, so I'm just going to tell you what it is. If you're majoring in hospitality and tourism, they're saying that is the third worst degree for today's job market. Anybody want to take a stab at why that is?
Because you don't need the degree to work at hotels or restaurants?
Right. It's all about money. It's basically that job starts about minimum wage and doesn't get much better than that in a short period of time. In a long period of time, it might get a little better. But so I think as we are parents and we see our kids and, they're telling us what they're going to major in, I think we just, take an interest. The whole idea is take an interest in your child, what they're doing. And if their ideal is to do it in 4 years, and make money, we might want to help them make some of those decisions because the market changes. I think today's market is more technical, so I think technical would be a way to go. One of the other things that I found doing some research is that homeschooling has been growing. homeschooling has actually grown by 61.8% over the last 10 years. Of the 2 million kids in school, 4% of them now are being taught at home. What do you think about homeschooling, Frank? And would you do it?
I would not do homeschooling, even though I've got a college degree and my wife has a doctorate degree. I think because the issue with me with homeschooling is you don't get a chance to interact with other human beings. I have relatives that homeschool their children. You know, they're in a Christian environment, etc. But at some point, a lot of the people that do homeschooling want to get their kids into an environment where they're participating with other kids through sports or, you know, musician programs or things like that. So I think at some point it's relevant if you're doing that, but at some point it becomes detrimental to them being able to be a whole citizen with other people in the United States.
Frank, this is
yes.
It's funny he brought that subject up. I've talked to a few people lately, and they all came up with the same answer why they are homeschooling. They've lost a lot of faith in the public school system. And the thing that I found interesting, they brought up what you just brought up about extracurricular sports and things like that. And in some of those areas, that's being privatized. They're actually putting together teams where they pay for play, I guess, but they're doing that in public schools. And they're getting that interaction after homeschooling, you know, at the end of the day, just like it used to be in regular schools. Have you heard of that?
I have a trainer that provides, you know, basketball for pay, other sports activities for pay as well. And so I didn't think about the fact that there might be a lot of homeschoolers in that. But typically, those programs are not the five-star programs. Those are like the three-star programs. In other words, the participants in those programs are not the top athletes, so to speak, in those
pay-for-play
programs.
Yeah, that may very well be true. How about anybody else?
I think homeschool. I would love to be able to homeschool somebody. The individual attention, somebody you really care about. I mean, it's not a mass-produced education. You know, it's one-on-one, or if you have two or three kids. And I think you could go quickly advance in all the educational areas because you'd be working with that child. And I think part of homeschooling is that you would enroll that child in extracurricular activities, whether it be at, like, maybe the School of Rock or, you know, a place that teaches music where other kids play. And you could take advantage of public schools. If you live in the public school district, you could send your kid over there to play football or baseball or even in the band, you know, supplement your homeschooling that way so they're more well-rounded. And, I mean, to be taught by a father or mother who doesn't have to work and can just, you know, give you that individual attention and then at the same time tell you got to work on your own now and do this on your own. I think those kids have a big advantage over children who are mass educated.
In our community in Virginia Beach, there are a lot of people that are private school or homeschool that are coming back into the school system because we have these AP, these heavy-duty science college programs that they're running in high school. But they don't let the and they want to be involved in the sports program, those that are homeschooled. So I think it's valuable being homeschooled, but how many years do you do that? And you can't, in our community, get back into the school system if you're homeschooled back into the athletic programs and through that door. There, you're either homeschool or you're not. But as I just pointed out, there's some communities, I guess, and I have trainers that are involved in basketball programs, but they're not participating with high schools, and they're not they're participating among leagues of their peers.
Well,
Go ahead, Ron.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I have to say that I'm with Frank on this, and I think there is some value maybe to homeschooling. I haven't seen it firsthand. I've only known one person my entire life who homeschooled his kids, and I'm not really sure how that ended up. But I'm a little bit skeptical, and I think there's something to be said for. I mean, for God's sake, why do teachers get, most of the teachers have master's or higher advanced degrees. So there's a reason that they go to school to be able to teach. I mean, they learn when they go to college how to teach the kids. So, I don't know that a parent, a dad or a mom, whatever the case may be, can do the same kind of job that a trained teacher with a degree can do. Now, I understand that there's a lot of schools that are overcrowded, and maybe in a case like that, it might be a good idea. But, if these are parents that have the ability to one of them stay at home and not work, then they also have the ability to send their kids to a private school, which are doing a great job for the most part.
Go ahead, Joe.
I think another advantage of homeschooling is the parent that has a special needs child. Maybe a child that's not so quick, not really like the other students in the classroom. And I think a parent could nurse that, could teach that child better because of his needs or individual needs because he's not like the other kids. That parent could bring him up to par with the other kids and maybe gradually put him back into the school system. Because, there are a lot of kids that go into kindergarten or first grade, third grade, they have a hard time, with the group. So those kids would have an advantage. And additionally, I think when you send your child to school, I think the children that do best are the ones that come home to parents that work with them with their schoolwork, take an interest in your schoolwork. What did you learn today? What kind of homework did you have? Well, let's go over your homework. Do you know your spelling words? Do you know how to do this? And so parents, even though they're not homeschooled, the active parent, with the education is, a semi-homeschooling, if you will.
In our community in Virginia Beach, probably after the AP, we have a bunch of academy schools, but probably the next thing that people move into our community for is for the special education programs. I think the cost of X, you cannot match the cost and the types of programs that are being offered in our community with special education in a private basis, unless you're wealthy. So that's what I hear from those people who have, for instance, I have my next door neighbor has a special education child. So there's a bus that comes by every morning privately to pick up the child. They do that all over the Virginia Beach, and they do it at a different age level than the normal child could get in the class as well, because there's some prep work that's being done in advance to prepare the child for an educational setting. So, and at some point they could be integrated back into the classroom. At some point they could stay in a more like a private setting as well. But that's one of the things that people see a very high value is that the public school special education program.
What do we do though with the people that want to homeschool, and how do they get credibility to say that my child is, let's say, has gone through K through 12 and now wants to go to college? How do they get the proof that they've been properly educated and can move on to college?
The state has a competency test that they take, and the state also provides a high school graduation certificate. And they even have a graduation ceremony where a bunch of people come out of their homes and go to a public setting. Yeah, those standards are specified by the state, and they're measured with testing that the child has to take. So that's how that process is kind of regulated. But the problem is, and they will also, you know, there's in our community of Virginia, there's laws that have been passed that allow private educated children to use public facilities, school facilities. But in fact, most school systems are against that because it takes away from their program, so it doesn't really happen that privately educated or home educated child gets a chance to use those facilities, even though the law permits the use of buses and things like that.
You know, one of the statistics was that teachers today are forced to only teach to the middle portion of their class. The high end and the low end students don't get as much attention as they need to, because they have to develop their syllabus so that everyone kind of understands. So they're really preaching or teaching to the middle level of the class, not on both ends. So they think that homeschooling, if your child is, you know, really sharp and you can teach it, that you should consider both high-end and low-end students because they need their preferred time. They don't need the same time other students do to process the lesson plan. So maybe with a parent or someone homeschooling, they go at the speed of the child, because the preferred speed of the child is the best way for that child to learn, and that those children on both ends are not learning as much as they can by being in a classroom setting. What do you think about that, Don? Hello? There we go. Mr. Wiggins, are you there? I thought he was there. Anyway, so what about you, Bruce? What do you think about that?
Well, as you were talking, I was thinking about if a teacher was allowed to teach, okay? Let's say you're in a public system, and it's better for the kids. I tend to agree, kids in a public setting is probably better for a number of interactive reasons. But the big complaint you hear parents say is they don't let teachers teach anymore. It's so restricted, and you just said teach to the middle. So let's say you let a really good teacher teach, and you still hold them accountable at the end of their semester or year by testing. Well, that's no different than it is right now. If they have a system to teach that is so restrictive right now, the only way they measure that system is at the end of the year with tests. So why not take the risk or the chance or the opportunity to turn the teacher loose and say, look, you've got to get from point A to point B. I don't really care how you get there, but you need to get there in the way that your students learn, because we're going to test you like anybody else. What would be wrong with that scenario?
There would not be anything wrong with that scenario because basically the kids that are homeschooled, I think they learn faster and more than the ones in school. Both the ones in school are more restricted because they have to go with the curriculum. But the homeschool child is learned by his speed, which is usually faster than his kids.
Right.
Okay.
If you had a teacher that recognizes that, and I know a few, we all know some that have been superb teachers, and you find them in the roughest neighborhoods and in the fanciest schools, you find them everywhere. That teacher would probably figure out a way to connect and teach to all those spectrums: the fast learner, the slow learner, the disruptor, the quiet one, and all of those things. And I just, for the life of me, why don't they just? And I think the teachers would feel much more empowered. Just turn them loose.
All right. Say that again, please.
The public system is not built that way to turn them loose. They're structured.
All right. Anyway, you're listening to the man's voice. Callers, you can call in and join in for the conversation by dialing 646-668-8740. Once again, we'd love to have you call in, and if you have some comments on school and homeschooling and the parents' involvement in this, give us a call. Let us talk with you. One of the things I want to make sure that as school begins, some states school has already begun. I know that in Georgia, for example, when I was down there, school had started a couple of weeks ago. But one of the things that seems to have happened, our parents are not as allowed to be on the campus. They're not wanted as much as, not that they're not wanted, it's just that there's so many security items and things that they are told, you know, if you come on campus, make sure you stop and do your ID and all those things. And so I'm encouraging parents to get involved in your schools. One of the questions, you know, that I wanted to bring up or talk about with the panel this week was, who is talking about our role models to our kids? Our kids, it seems now, are the way you walk or the way you talk is how you become a role model these days. When a lot of us were going to school, our role models were people that the parents talked about or people that were doing things in the community or doing things nationally. And we were told we need to emulate our lives a little bit on that line because that was a strong community person. Now it's, you know, the rappers and the guys who walk with their pants sagging and all those are becoming our role models. And I don't know what we need to do as men to encourage our children to pick our role models. But the other issue who are our role models these days? I'm not sure.
Well, David?
Yes.
I would, you know, let me just say this very strongly about role models. Our foremost role model for a lot of our children, including Afro-American children, and this is a non-political statement, is the President of the United States. For my lifetime, I couldn't foresee a more important role model for a large segment of our population in the United States. So I would say that for me, we are actually saved through his presence in office, the current president that we have. And that's on a couple of focal points. One is the complexion of his skin from all perspectives, ethnic perspectives, looking at that Oval Office. That includes his family and his wife and his life that he's had. Servant leader. Which is what we proclaim in our faith communities. Servant leader, being an example of marriage, being an example of a family, of the care and love for the family. Changing the situation in America where we've never had a minority person in a leadership position, in our top leadership position in our particular country. So I think that trumps the, for me, I think that trumps all the rap artists. I think the rap artists will come and go, but I think that the president situation that we've established in our country will be with us historically and in our current situation.
I agree on a certain level. On another level, I think that's what my kids are seeing firsthand or listen to or on the radio in the morning on the ride to school. And I think it's going to take us or it takes the mother and the father trying to rework that piece to tell kids, you know, you should. That's nice and well, but that's what they do. But who is that other person in the community now that are role models? I mean, we used to have community leaders that were role models. We don't talk about role models much anymore, even with the President of the United States, which we should be doing. Anyone should be, you know, at someone at that caliber should be looking at that as a role model. But I don't think we as family talk about that as much as we used to, but I don't know if I'm wrong or right. What do you think? Is that something that has gone to the wayside, or what do you think?
Well, um, to say one thing. I mean, I understand what Frank was saying about President Obama, and I don't agree, but I think kids nowadays are more concerned about, you know, their social media and, you know, the MTV awards, and that's where they're learning, and that's where they're getting, in my opinion, who their role models are. And that's why you said, you know, the rap artists and all that. I don't think really kids nowadays really care about the president or vice president as role models, and don't really pay that much attention to what's going on in politics. I hope that I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. So, you know, and, you know, going back to when I was a kid, and, you know, I'm 53, so a long time ago, I don't remember really my parents really instilling in me, you know, who their role models are. I think even back then, I, you know, watching TV and whatever, I guess, and interacting with my friends, I think that's how I became to choose who my role models are, not really by talking to my parents. Maybe I'm an exception.
What about you, Bruce?
My answer is kind of a hybrid of the two. I tend to favor what Ron said, but with a different mindset. I think the reason the TV and the MTV award and the entertainment people are the ones they look to more is because they're popular. If somehow we took the president, as Frank said, or someone in a high important position and really led whatever that person's responsible for and showed examples of morals and trust and all of that, and that was made that person popular, like, you know, maybe like Mahatma Gandhi or people like that, then they too would be I think interesting to the youth. But that kind of strength, that kind of leadership isn't popularized the way it should be. It's not held up in esteem. They'd probably call Einstein, look at that crazy guy. He invents cool things, but he's nuts. So I think it's a mixture of popularity and strength that is needed in today's world for people to want to follow them.
Right.
Well, I think like Obama or people like Obama can inspire children. You know, I can be a congressman or a senator or a president, so they can aspire to be that. You know, I think people on MTV maybe influence our kids at a certain age. You know, they'll dress that way, but I don't really think it has a long-term effect, whereas Obama might inspire, or even Hillary Clinton might inspire a little girl to, like, go into politics later on in life. But I think role models, I think the thing that affects children the most are their family. You know, if they have a stable mother and father there that are loving and caring, that they themselves will be people of goodwill like their parents. And I think the role model is provided by mom and dad. And Obama or Hillary can inspire.
Well, I wanted to share this also, that when I grew up, the people that inspired me early age was Ralph Bunche, and that's because Ralph Bunche was provided a positive living image of a successful Afro-American working in the major policy areas of our country. The next person, as a young person, and I'm talking about, you know, before I was 12 years old, was Marian Anderson. And again, I was aware of the history of Marian Anderson, but also her breakthroughs. And I didn't see my parents, by the way, and I don't to this day, as being good role models for my future. I saw it maybe in my grandparents, some uncles, but not in the whole community, and not in my entire family. That was so, and that's one of the problems I see with parenting, is that we have people that are not good role models who are parents. So I think they're bigger distractors than maybe some rap artists and people like that.
All right. I want to just move on. Just go ahead. Someone had a comment? Okay. I want to move on just a little bit because I know that these are hard times for some of us, and our kids are on their way to school. Either they're starting tomorrow or they've been in school for a couple of weeks or so. But one of the things that always comes up about this period of time is making sure that your child has what they need for school. Now, there's two thoughts on that, what a child needs and what a child wants. A child wants tennis shoes, and a child wants some Jordans. But what a child needs is pens and paper and books and things that he can get the work done. So I think we as fathers, we struggle to give them a combination of both. But when we can't, we feel sorry about that. But that's a good time to bring out that role model portion of sitting down with your kids and saying, you know, this is what I can do, and what you're going to school for can, you know, help, and to have those conversations with your kids. This is a good time if you are unable to meet on their needs, or you're able to meet on their needs, but you don't find them that important. This is a good time to present some of that role model and have those conversations with your kids. What do you think, Ron? Am I on the right track or am I wrong?
On the right track, although I'm not entirely sure that I understand if there's a question in there. You know, yes, kids have different needs and they have different wants. And, you know, the family should be primarily the ones to provide for that. But, and, you know, I have a brother who's a school teacher, and his girlfriend is also a school teacher. And, you know, sometimes they tell me stories that are just unbelievable, that they have to go out and buy supplies with their own money because, number one, the school doesn't provide them, and the parents, I guess, sometimes don't have the money to provide them. So, you know, it's a problem.
And what about you, Bruce? What are your thoughts on this? Hello?
I'm here. I like your comment about using opportunities as examples to be that right kind of role model. And those opportunities, I think, are better spent when they come up in conversation and in situations, not just sit down and say, now, son, I want to talk to you about wants and needs. I think as it kind of comes along, getting prepared for school, or they come to you and ask, why can't I have that brand name pair of shoes versus these here? I don't like these. Well, you know, they may not always like your answer, but it's an opportunity to be their role model. So I tend to, and I also, if there's a way you can, in some small way or in one way, reward a little bit and get them what they really want, even they see it as a want, and that's what it is, then do that if you can do that. But I think those teaching examples come up in day to day, and you should take advantage of them when they occur.
All right. I have a comment. Go ahead, Joe.
I had that experience. My son went to an affluent high school. And he wanted me to get him clothes from Abercrombie and Finch. And here's a T-shirt for $70. And I said, man, I can't do that. I mean, I'm you know, James Dean was pretty cool. He just wore a white T-shirt. You know, that ain't going to fly. And, you know, that's what I like about the parochial schools. You know, all the boys got blue pants and blue shirts and a tie, maybe. The girls all have the same skirt. So it's not about the clothes. You're just going to school to learn, you know, not to wear your Abercrombies or your Jordans. And, you know, but, you know, a lot of the schools, you know, these kids have got some really, you know, nice swag and clothes and a lot of money, and your kid wants to keep up, and you want to have your kid keep up.
I'd like to point out a couple of things too, David, since you're talking about going back to school. One of them is I've heard and I believe that our most important institution we have in our country is a public education system. And secondly, the thing that makes it hard about public schools is just what we just mentioned, this clothing thing, this clothing and how you have to dress and how you have to be. That's one of the negative sides of it. The third thing and the last thing I have is that the teacher's teaching to a certain level. And what I found out in the community that I live in, which is a prosperous community of almost a 500,000 people, sometimes said that we don't have any poor people, but that isn't true. They buy school books, so many of them, and if you get a smart child walking in and he isn't in a specialized program, and remember, in our community, we have specialized kids, so if you're a gifted kid, you'll never see a regular classroom unless you want to be in that classroom. You're at a gifted school from the time you're in elementary through high school, and if you're smart in a given area, computer science or math, you can foreseeably spend half your time in school in those classes. But textbooks are only bought for normal classes to a certain level, and they don't go out and buy additional textbooks if you finish those textbooks during that school year. So that's one of the problems with public education is a limitation on having additional material available, because school systems generally don't spend that extra money to do that for a child.
Right. Frank? Frank, you made the comment about, you know, dressing in the public schools and how that can be a challenge. I don't know where you live if this is the case, but some schools down here, public schools, have actually gone to uniform, like the private schools.
Yes. I'm here.
Yes, and we have that not in Virginia Beach. Well, we have one elementary school that had that for about 8 years in Virginia Beach. It was in the lowest financial area, you know, earning area, and we had that one public school. And you know, I could tell you some stories about that. That's no longer exists. There are a couple schools in those academic areas in Norfolk that have that same program. They look like they're private schools, and they're doing that so the kids won't be competing with Jordans and stuff like that, more competing with the educational material. But it is a big distractor. It's a big distractor in churches. It's a big distractor in school systems on how you dress and what your appearance is.
Okay, I want to change this a little bit because I got a comment from a listener. Obviously, texted, asked a question and gave an answer and a question. It says, on your past shows, you talked about politicians being a problem. The question is, why are we allowing our politicians to be a problem? Why aren't we voting them out? And then he, in parentheses, it says, is it because of big business running our politicians? You want to take that, Don? Can you help with that?
Well, you know, David, this has been one of the most, unpredictable, crazy political seasons I've ever witnessed in my life. And I've been over in Earth and a part of Earth for over 40 years, but I've never seen a like.
Hello?
I think you lost him.
And
you
lost. There we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, I just think that this is such a strange political season, and a lot of people are being turned off by it, and more people are engaged to the political climate more so than ever, I think. MSNBC and CNN, ratings are off the chain. People are really tuned in to the political climate, but it's so different. I mean, we've got two
of the most unpopular presidential candidates running, and then it's driving the local level as well. So this is a very, very interesting speech for us.
All right. I think we're losing him again. But so talk to me, Ron. Why are we letting our politicians be a problem? Because what we've said several times, a lot of the things that we're doing for our families or everything is because the politicians have made it that way. And the question is, why are we allowing our politicians to be the problem? What happened?
I disagree with that statement. I don't think you can say that we're allowing the politicians to be the problem, because ultimately we have the power when we go vote in November and when we vote in local elections. If we don't like somebody, we have the power to not vote for them. So I think it's just people that are voting stupidly and then complaining after the fact.
Or not voting at all.
Why are we saying, as we, for the last few weeks, we've been talking about the election and things like that, and we keep saying, well, if we had the right people in office, we would have the things done correctly, and we keep saying that. So the person who's writing this is saying, we keep saying that, but so what? Why have the politicians become a problem? Why are we saying the politicians are problems? Go ahead.
I'd like to offer. Yeah, there's an article I read a couple of weeks ago that indicated that we're not supposed to produce ideal results in our politicians or even in our laws in our country based on the form of government we have, because we have the extremes on all sides. And so that's one of the things. We don't get optimum results in politicians. We're not going to get optimum results in our laws as well. I think we would have different subset of politicians if we had more people on the voting list and more parties that we had other than the two major parties. But we're not going to get optimum politicians or optimum laws, because we're set up to make everything in a compromised position. That's our form of government, is really compromise.
Right.
David, can I give you an example on a local level?
Yes, sir.
This is where, and I just went through this, and it was gratifying, and it was a little bit of work, but it's felt like something I need to do. On the local level, you can directly cause the most influence, the most interest, make the most positive change if you think something's wrong. There were county commissioners. There's one in particular. She was brand new, hadn't run before. Knocked on my door, introduced herself to me, and got interested in what she had to say, and I believed her. So I sat down with her a couple of times over the next couple of months after that, and at least gave her my thoughts on what do I do to try and win my seat, and whether I was right or wrong, it was what I felt could help her. And she said that I helped her win, myself and others. So I guess my point is get involved. It can be as little or as much as you want, but if you think there's someone out there that's of substance, help them in some way to get elected. As I think Ron or Frank or someone said earlier, if you sit on the sidelines and complain, don't do anything, well, you have no reason to complain, because you're not making a difference.
You
right,
know something, Bruce?
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah.
No.
You there,
Don? Don, are you there? There you are.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, Tuesday is the election here in South Florida, and that's where we're going to elect the judges, supervisor of election, sheriff, the local people that affect our everyday life.
Exactly.
That's where we're going to elect them on Tuesday. And that's the most important part of the voting process on the local level. That's where you can affect your everyday life. So that's where we really got to get involved. Everybody's so focused on November, the national scene. but the focus should be locally right now.
Well, and Don, we spend the, I'm generalizing here, we spend the least amount of time on the most important part of what you just said. I'm guilty of it too. And I decided I liked this person. I said, I'm going to try and help her. So I did. And I agree with you 100%. We've got it upside down and backwards.
You're absolutely right. Because, see, we don't give that much publicity and forum and open town hall meetings to judges, commissioners, council people. And those people affect our everyday life, and they're touchable. You know, and I'll tell you, I'm so involved in the local level here, more so than I've ever been in my entire voting process.
Right. Right. On the local level, that's where the people who are touching us the close and the hardest are on our local level. For things that happen to us on a daily basis. So you're right. I think you're true. What about you, Joe? What do you think about this subject?
Yeah, I think local politics is big, you know, for your community. I've never been involved in it myself. I don't know that I can comment extensively.
All right. One of the things that I think we have to get ready for, believe it or not, I was just reading where Oregon State Fair just is the first state or to allow marijuana plants to be on display during their state fair as a growable product. So I think that just opens the door.
Next to the corn or the soybean?
It's in there with the farm things, the corn and the beans and everything
soybean.
Else. Now there are marijuana plants on display in the first state fair.
Where is the hybrid corn that everybody goes crazy over?
But I think they're opening the door to
David, I just want to say no GMO marijuana. I can't, you know, I can't go by that. It's got to be natural.
Got to be natural.
Yeah. Wow. I think, it is where we're going. It is where this country is going. So I think we need to, as we're moving along, thinking about it as we're being role models for our kids and all that kind of thing, we need to make sure that that piece is on the table because it's becoming public in our faces. But then again, I guess that goes back to when alcohol was not legal. And it came out, and we managed it quite well. So do you think the world is ready for it, or do you not think the world is ready for it? What do you think? What do you think, Joe? Do you think the world is ready for this? Or the United States is ready for this?
Well, I mean, it's in general use, you know? And it's I would say, you know, a lot of people think it's, like, horrible, but I don't think it's a horrible thing. I don't think it's good for your health, but I think
right.
The worst thing, cigarettes, nicotine should be outlawed, you know, by comparison. But marijuana is in general use, and I think that, you know, if somebody's working and lose their job over marijuana, I think that's wrong, especially if their work performance is good, and the only way they found out was they experienced that. But if you're doing your job and you're productive in the community and then you get arrested for marijuana use, I think that's kind of unproductive.
Right. All right. It's something that happened it's the first that has happened. So I think we need to look at that and talk about that as we move along and talk about all the things that are going on around us. Some of the things that are going on around us, like, for example, today, a few dozen women walked bare-chested in New York down Broadway Boulevard because they believe that they have a call for women to have as much rights as men to be bare-chested in public. Of course, in New York, that law has been there since 2012, but they're looking for the world to – what do you think about that, men? As men, do we – think about that? I mean, is that something we see coming and that we think should be there?
It should
or is it something
there,
or is it concerned about?
It is not always the pretty scene.
Yeah. Well, and David, do we have more and more people looking for issues to say, well, I want to change that? Well, why? Well, I don't know why I want to change it. I just want to change it. And they're going around just trying to change things for change's sake, and it may not be a smart move at all. I wonder about some of this. Do you really want to go bare-chested down the sidewalk? What? I don't get it.
Well, it happened today in New York, and it seems like a few dozen women, and there were some men who joined in with them. I don't know why, but I mean, I don't know why.
Well, that's not always a pretty scene either.
Do they just want attention? Do they just want attention, David?
Yeah. Well, it happened in New York today. They went down, they did a protest down in Broadway. Of course, and what no one really paid attention to, it has been legal in New York since 2012 for men and women to be bare chested, but I think they're doing it for national attention. So I think it's something else we need to look at that will probably be happening the more it gets picked up. You know how that goes. And for those of us with teenagers, I have something that I found quite surprising. There was a 17-year-old young man named Julio Gonzalez, and he was in Mexico. And he was sitting at the dinner table, and he went into a convulsion, and they rushed him to the hospital. And what had happened was his girlfriend had gave him a hickey on his neck, and the blood clot traveled to his brain and killed him. So those of us with teenagers who come home and you see these marks, this is something to talk to your kids about. Be careful, because a young man just recently died, 17 years old, in Mexico, because his girlfriend gave him a hickey and it created a blood clot. It killed the boy. So I think if we have teenagers and we're trying to be role models and manage our families, that's an important piece to remember to talk about health. You were going to say something, Bruce?
Yeah, then David, how insane is the example that, quote, role models are playing called Olympic athletes that are doing cupping. And that's kind of a giant hickey all over their various parts of their body. And I don't profess to be a sports medicine person, but how is that any different than what you just described, other than it's in a different location?
But you mean the swimmers with all those big round circles?
Yeah, that's what they call that. It's a suction cup that they put on there, and it's much worse than a hickey.
I saw that and I was wondering what that was, and then I read about
there,
it.
That is.
Yeah.
They're drawing blood to certain muscles and so forth, but if it. I never heard the thing. If it's somehow causing potential for increased blood clots, that's not a good thing and not a very good thing to show as a role model, is it?
No, it's not. It was very strange to see in the Olympics that was going on with all the, you know, people getting expelled for doing different things that were, you know, not
right.
legal. And I was wondering how was that, who sanctioned that?
There were several athletes that did it. It was, I guess, legal, or they wouldn't have been able to do it.
Right.
I think they were all Americans, too, the ones that did it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, that cupping is Chinese medicine. And,
yes.
And they'll do it for you at therapeutic massage. They'll also do cupping. So that's like that's been around for thousands of years. It's something the Chinese do. That's where it came from.
But
all right.
You need your pause.
We're in our last minute. One of the things I want to tell everyone who's listening is Thanksgiving travel. If you're planning to go somewhere, get your tickets now, because the rates are due to go up, and you'll be paying if you wait late to get your tickets to go somewhere for Thanksgiving. So buy now and save some of those dollars that you'd be spending if you wait till later. So as we move on, everyone, once again, and thanks again, I will be talking to you from someone else next Sunday.
Somewhere south.
Yeah, somewhere else. But once again, this has been the man's voice. I want to thank you for listening, for those of you that were listening, and I want to thank my panel for being here, and say good night and have a nice week, guys.
Have a great week, everybody.
Have a nice week.
Thank you.